Anatika.
Hi, this is Laura Keisler from ATEC. Elaine's on.
Don's here.
As the person who has control of the whiteboard, I'm not exactly sure how it works, but I've got something up. But because my name hasn't showed up, I don't know how. I'm assuming I can do everything I need to do, but so far I haven't figured out how it works.
Hi. You'll get some guidance very soon.
Good.
I'm hoping.
Hi, this is Tamara.
Hi, Tamara.
So who is on?
Mark's on.
Don's on.
Yeah. Brian's on.
I use.
For man, for Virginia Space Grant.
Hi, Barbara.
Hello.
Is Elaine on yet?
I'm on. The site that the moderator goes to didn't have me sign in for some reason. I'm not sure why. So I just went to the other site and signed in that way.
Oh, well, the thing is that if you're the moderator, you can... All right, wait a minute. All right.
So you signed in for me as Turk Administration, I think. Sorry, this is boring for everybody, but I just wasn't quite sure how it worked.
You're supposed to be the Turk Administrator.
So I'm the Turk Administrator.
But
okay.
Did you sign in that way?
It just popped up without requiring me to do anything.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
And you should be able, then you have the control to show your slides.
And then all I have to remember to do is, I know that I have to have the slides on my screen, but I've forgotten what you do to...
All right, so go up to... So do you have your slides on your own monitor?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right, so then go to Tools on the top menu bar.
Yep.
And then Application Sharing.
Okay.
And then go to Share Application.
Share Application, okay. And then it says... Adobe, yeah, that's what I want. I see. Okay, now I get it.
Put up your first slide, and we will start a conversation first with announcements.
Right. Okay, now somehow I have to go back. How do I go back in this thing?
Excuse me. Hi, it's Laura Tenenbaum. I just got on.
Hi.
Hi, Laura.
Hi.
I just got on, too.
Is everybody on Illuminate? Because it's telling me I need a session login number.
That's what I got, too. What do we do?
A session login number? You just don't put your name in?
Oh, I can put in my name? Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah, it's just so it comes up in the list of who's participating.
So then your name comes up in this list.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And there's a problem with getting on the website. I don't know what it is, but at some point... we need to figure out how to get on the website because it doesn't just work.
The URL was wrong. You have to go to a different URL, which I just sent out.
With a question mark.
But it comes up on my browser. The URL has a question mark at the end.
That is very strange.
Now, are we supposed to go on the website and on the Illuminate, or can we just do the Illuminate?
Just do the Illuminate, and then if somebody's going to show a website, they can share their browser, and everybody will see it who's logged into Illuminate.
Got it. Thank you. Hi, everyone.
This is so much fun.
Oh, we're going to get so much better at this.
So, Laura, well, congratulations for the Webby Award. Maybe
I know.
For folks that are not familiar, could you just take a second to
tell us about it?
Talk a little bit.
The Webby or
the Webby
website.
And why you guys got it.
Oh, well, we got it because all of you on the phone call voted for us. So we were nominated, our website, which is climate.nasa.gov. It's NASA's climate change website, and I did a presentation, I don't know, maybe a month ago, on this very same Illuminate. And you could win by either the committee votes for you, or you could win also by people's voice, and we won the people's voice, which means people, like everyone on this telecon, must have voted for us, and maybe even their friends voted for us, so thank you so much. And we just found out this morning that we won people's voice by a narrow margin, I believe, because we were neck and neck with Scientific American the whole time.
Wow.
Cool. So Laura, I put up the notice about this on the website, too, so it's already up there in the telecon.
Oh, thank you so much. Now,
yeah.
The other thing, I have another announcement, so I might as well say it now.
Okay.
I just sent an email around. I had made an announcement about putting professional development on our website, so that just went live maybe 7 minutes ago. So so all of the people who sent me their professional development links and their information and their logos, I sent that around, so you now have the link. Everybody in the Climate Literacy Network has the link, and then if you're on our website and click on For Educators, that will come up. So all your websites all your professional development seminars are now listed on the site, and then probably within the next 48 hours, we're going to have an educator resources. So some of you have sent me not necessarily professional development stuff, but any kind of educator resource will be up there as well. So thank you.
Cool.
Hi, this is Marta.
So can people continuously send you things?
Yes, thank you for saying that. This is going to be ongoing, so some of the things have dates on them, and then when they expire, they'll be removed, and some of the professional developed things are ongoing, like internet courses and stuff like that, so they'll stay. But yes, people can continue sending me any professional development opportunities or educator opportunities. The best thing is like a little paragraph, a link, the dates, and a PDF of the logo that you want next to your section. And then
would it be useful on the Climate Literacy Network site to indicate people could suggest resources?
That would be great. Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. You can indicate that. So yes, people can ongoing send me either resources or professional development opportunities or courses, stuff like that, and I'll just keep updating that that page as needs be. Once the page is set up, it's actually pretty easy to update it. It's the setting up that takes a minute. But, you know, it took like 2 weeks for everybody to send me their PD, and then another, you know, because there was a lot of mayhem about Earth Day, everything going on, and then it just went live.
Very good. Well, congratulations.
Thank you. Well, congratulations to all of you guys. We're now all hooked up on the website together.
And this is Marta. Sorry, I came in late. Who was just speaking?
Oh, it's Laura Tenenbaum from the climate.nasa.gov website.
Great.
And I was just making the announcement that a number of people had sent professional development opportunities, and I created a web page, and it's live.
Oh, great. And so, Laura, what's your email that we send the information to?
I guess I should send out another. Well, did you just get an email about 6 minutes ago announcing the link? If you got that.
I may have. I just was on another conference.
Yeah,
call,
it's
so,
kind of, I have a long, difficult, and hard to spell name, so it's better.
Email's
if you just
at the bottom of that message.
Okay, great. I'll look for it. Sorry.
Yeah. It's there.
Yeah, and I should probably send out another email just to kind of make an announcement. Please send me more PD anytime, and then you can just have it back.
Okay,
thanks.
Great.
Okay, great. Any other announcements? One thing that I wanted to ask, I know that the letters of intent for the NSF Climate Change Education Partnerships were due a couple of Fridays ago now. I was just wondering how many, I know Mark, you guys have one in and I'm submitting one, but I just was wondering if anybody else was I'm submitting one that's on this call.
Virginia Space Grant is going to submit one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The Ecological Society of America, along with AGU and NAAE, are submitting one.
Okay, so that's AGU and
NAAE, right.
There's also several people out here, the Space Science Institute, which is in Boulder, is teaming up with some people at UCAR and the university to submit one. That I think is geared towards Latinos and will be focused on a three-state region, apparently. And then we've also talked to people up in Fort Collins that will be putting together a regional proposal involving CMAP, which is an NSF-funded project on modeling, climate modeling, along with the Rocky Mountain Science and Sustainability Network. Then there's also a Northern Rockies regional proposal focused on Wyoming and Montana that is coming out of Montana State University. So those projects kind of overlap with what we're proposing, which is more an intermountain clean project, basically, that would also involve MARTA and all the good work she's doing to link arts and sciences.
And I heard from Aldecena that there were 150 letters of interest.
Okay, I was wondering how many were.
And I think they were expecting 30.
They were expecting 30?
Yeah. I think that's right, or maybe 50, I'm not sure. But it was
I know, I've actually heard, I know that there's one going out of the University of Connecticut that focused on decision makers. And I know there's also one going out of UMass Amherst. There's one going on at Boston University. There's one. I don't know what all of these, the focus of all of these, but there's one going out of Dartmouth. So there's a lot of them.
And UW has got one, too.
Yep.
Yeah, there's also a COSI network put one in around ocean and climate interaction. And that's a large group of organizations, including the University of Washington.
And also one out of the University of Oregon that's focused on decision makers, particularly folks at local agencies, and aiming at climate adaptation as the theme.
Mm-hmm.
And Susie Mosier is involved with that.
Oh, great. So I wonder if this is Marta. I wonder if there's a way to get all of the applicants and find out about the proposals, because
people aren't. I don't think that'll happen. I think people. That's a lot of people keep things. I mean, we talk a lot. People keep things very confidential.
No, not so much about exactly what they applied for, but just in terms of like creating the network. You know, making it bigger somehow would be cool.
We do invite. We have been inviting people that have been involved in various meetings that are focused on climate change education, and we've been inviting them to join this network, which has been pretty effective. We have about 175 people on the listserv now.
Wow.
We regularly have, I know you can't tell from the number of voices on the phone, but we regularly have between 15 and 25 people on the phone.
Uh-huh.
So there are a lot of people that are listening, even if they're not talking.
Where are you guys?
Hi there, it's Linda Herrer here.
Oh,
is that?
Okay.
I just wanted to say hello. Linda Herrer joined a little late, sorry.
Hi, Linda.
Hi.
Okay, are there any other announcements? Okay, if not, then I will turn it over to Elaine.
Let me just quickly ask... can you still see the slides?
It just went away.
It
just went away.
Now, can you see it?
No,
login.
The Illuminate login just came. Oops, now they're there.
There you go.
There they are.
Okay, good. The reason why I was just trying to figure out how to get rid of that, the bar at the top, and I couldn't figure out I was messing around with it while we were talking. So as long as you can see something, we'll go with that.
Okay.
Well, thanks, everybody. I'm interested that we've had such a good group joining the call for last week's meeting, talking about education perspectives, and today's meeting focusing a little more specifically on environmental education. We've had such a rich collection of conversations over time, and also resources providing background on educational techniques that are applicable. So today's presentation about environmental education is both additive and also giving a perspective. And I've been kind of a little even confused about thinking about how to present this, because as an environmental educator, I see environmental education, you know, as the kind of the foundation of types of education people should use. But obviously, I think all of you who are listening who are not environmental education professionals can think of this as what I'm going to present today as a way of looking at the education opportunity, but keeping in mind that we've learned about, through this conversation and other work that we all do, many other perspectives, communication strategies, and some that I can't list today, but I remember Mark sending out something recently. So there's lots of points of view. It is confusing, though. How do we tackle this big topic, and how do we tackle it effectively? So today's conversation is one more angle on a way to look at what might be possible. The first slide there shows a number of publications that have come out of a project called ETAP, which is an EPA, U.S. EPA-funded project that's gone on for many years, trying to look specifically at training professionals, and in particular K-12 education, but with some emphasis on non-formal education or informal education as well, and an additional emphasis on teacher training. So that's kind of a background piece of that's presented on that first slide. Okay, now I get to figure out how to do this. All right, let's see. I think it's like this. Okay. Lots of ways you could do this.
Did everybody change? Mine's still on the
screen. It didn't change.
No.
It didn't change. Okay, then I have to do it a different way. How about this, if I do it like...
Do you have, on the top, you have a bar with a... some arrows to the right and left at the top?
I have arrows that go up and down, and I tried that, and you all said nothing changed.
No, but only...
changed from one to two.
Highlight the Illuminate session, not your application, but the Illuminate session.
Whether so I have something with a yellow...
There it was.
It changed, and then it went away.
Does that work?
There it was.
Went away again? Yeah. Does that work? Can you see it now? I have something with a yellow box around it.
Now we're back to the Illuminate screen.
The plain Illuminate screen? It seems to have
your login screen.
I'm not on my login screen on my...
There it is again. Whatever you did, it brought it back.
You know, there's a lag of about 10 seconds or 15 seconds. So that's what we're... So,
okay. Well, we'll just be patient.
Does it say key ideas at the top?
Yes.
Oh, good. Well, there's two. Okay, now I'm going to try something else. One more thing, because I have a slider bar at the side, and I have arrows at the top, and I used the arrows before, and you all said you didn't see anything, but maybe that was because of the lag. So after this slide, I'll try the arrows again, and we'll see if it works. Very entertaining. All right, so for other people, the problem is, of course, I was trying too many experiments while we were talking, which doesn't help anything. But okay, so as I was trying to say then, we're focusing on environmental education today as a way of framing our climate change education opportunities. Last week, Noah Feinstein gave us kind of some big picture ways of looking at it, looking at place and audiences and that kind of thing. So today we're going to be looking at it from the point of view of the discipline of environmental education. And looking at this key ideas slide here, I wanted to remind everyone that environmental education is a profession which has come out of other outdoor education, nature education, a number of other professions that have existed for quite a long time, but this profession has been developing sort of as a profession probably since about 1970 or a little bit before, and there's a lot of history, of course. But so what I'm going to be showing to you today has come out of multiple professional conversations that have been happening over the last 50 years and have been documented mostly on the NAAEE website as one place that you can go to look. And I want to remind everybody again, if, in case I forget to say this, all the content that I'm showing today is presented in documents that are on the NAAEE website, and the URLs are all at the very end of this slide presentation, so I didn't put them on the exact page. Okay, so what is environmental education? It's there's some very sticky verbal points here, and we talk about environmental education as being in, about, and for the environment. And you'll notice the name for NAAEE is officially called the North American Association for Environmental Education, and that word "for" is significant. So if you hear anyone talking about the profession of environmental education, keep that "for" environment in mind. But essentially, environmental education focuses on environmental systems, interdependence, and the importance of where one lives. All right. Slide change. Please tell me when you can see the new slide.
Well, it changed the number from 2 to 3, but the slide hasn't changed.
Yeah, I saw the number changed also from 2 to 3.
All right. Okay, that means the slider on the side is the one to go to, probably. Let me try that. Okay, let me know when you see. I tried the slider on the side this time. Let me know when you see that.
I'm very
saw you move the slider.
You could see the slider move.
It was there and it went away.
Okay, I was fooling around again. I'm so sorry.
All right,
I just won't fool around at all. It does take about 15 seconds to change, though.
Oh, my God, and that seems like such a long time now.
It does. I know, 15 seconds. Did you get... So you should have a slide that says goals now. Did you see that?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Good. All right, I'm just going to use the slider. The goals for environmental education came out of an international conference that some of you may have heard of before, called the Tbilisi Intergovernmental Conference, which took place in the USSR in 1977. And obviously there's a very long document that came out of that meeting, but three key points from that document I repeated here. And these are goals, then, that the professionals in environmental education have built the profession on. But I like repeating them because they show kind of the breadth of what environmental education professionals are trying to do. So essentially, the environmental education, the purpose is to foster clear awareness of and concern about economic, social, political, and ecological independence in urban and rural areas, to provide every person with opportunities to acquire the knowledge, values, attitudes, commitment, and skills needed to protect and improve the environment, and finally, to create new patterns of behavior of individuals, groups, and society as a whole toward the environment. And please stop me, especially as we're waiting for these new slides to show up. if you want to talk about any of these things, because I'm going to kind of whiz through the main components. And there is some debate about some of these aspects and how they're applied with different age groups, et cetera. Noah kind of alluded to that a little bit last time. But, if you want to hear more about that, please don't hesitate to ask. So you should have on your screen something called environmental literacy.
No,
is that there?
Not yet.
Well, as we're waiting for it, please tell me when it pops up. The published materials about environmental education identify four different topics as components of environmental literacy. And these are questioning, analysis, and interpretation skills, knowledge of environmental processes and systems, skills for understanding and addressing environmental issues, and personal and civic responsibility. Did it come up yet?
No.
It says we're on slide 4, but it's still showing goals.
Yeah. I'm afraid to touch anything for fear that we'll lose it again. Last time I went out and came back in, and then you all seemed to see it. Should I try it? I don't know. That seems like a burdensome way to do things.
And it's something not right here.
There it goes now.
Yeah, and everyone across the country, of course, gets it at the same time.
Cool. All right, so there are the environmental literacy skills. Maybe I should go ahead. While you're looking at that one, I'll move to the next one. But for the environmental literacy skills, the point I wanted to make there is that these are, again, skills that have been identified through a very extensive peer review process. But they're not the only environmental literacy skills in the world. And, for example, many states have written their own environmental literacy statements, which incorporate many of these ideas, but might be written in language that a legislator could understand, for example, or a non-educator could understand. So these are presented as ones that are in the literature, but you may see other environmental education environmental literacy definitions elsewhere. Okay, do you have educator skills up there yet?
No.
Nope. Boy, this lag time is more than 15 seconds, because I changed it a while ago.
We were testing the system earlier today, and it didn't take this long. I don't know why it...
Well, somehow when I think I may have screwed it up in some way, but somehow when I go out and have my blank screen, you see that right away, but you're just not seeing this right away. It made me wonder whether to change it on... see, that's my blank screen, and it made me...
Right.
But when I go into the Adobe, it comes up as...
There it is.
It finally popped up, huh?
Okay.
When I go out and come back in, it pops up. That's very odd.
Yeah.
Well, anyway...
it gets refreshed.
It refreshes, maybe. Yeah, that's it, somehow. Okay, so maybe I'll go on to the next one. I'll do it that way for the rest of them, I guess. So this group of professionals, as I mentioned, over about 50 years then, has developed a number of criteria for various aspects of environmental education, and one is a list of skills that educators need to have in order to be environmental education professionals. And so 5 skills are listed on your screen there. Understanding the what we call the foundations of environmental education, which is sort of the extensive history and underlying components, including that initial statement that I gave about the Tbilisi document, responsibilities of a professional in the area, how to plan and implement environmental education, a goal for fostering learning, and applying skills for assessment and evaluation. And each of these are laid out in the Guidelines for Excellence series of materials that you can find on the NAAEE site in much more detail. But I wanted to mention that that this is a category that are included. Okay, now I tried this. I don't know if it's working. Can you see education materials yet?
Not quite. We're still on skills.
Yeah, it disappeared.
Yep, now we are.
Oh, yay! I'm trying to do it ahead, but, you know, talking and, you know, clicking at the same time, I don't seem to be able to multitask. What was that recent study that said people can do 2 things at the same time but not 3 or something? But anyway, okay, I can't talk, click, whatever, all at the same time. So another category of criteria that have been developed by the professionals are criteria for educational materials, and you'll see a list of 6 categories there, and the NAAEE and ETAP, along with ETAP, have provided a panel of people who have been vetted by the association who are able to assist with reviewing education materials for these 6 criteria. And many of these things are sort of common sense things, but But so in general, we're asserting that these are the criteria that we care about, and then the backup materials provide much more detail about what to include, what needs to be included. And so you see there fairness and accuracy, depth, emphasis on skill building, action orientation, instructional soundness, and usability.
Ooh.
Okay, I'm trying the same silly thing again. Did you get the next one?
For a moment.
Oh, we've seen it.
We did.
We know it's about strategy.
Oh, you mean it did it by itself?
No, it was there long enough for us to read the heading and then disappeared again. And now we've got the...
It was tantalizing.
Your screen, yes.
Did it come back yet?
Nope. No, we've got your...
Which one do you have now?
Screen.
A black.
I have your Illuminate screen.
Oh, yeah.
You could do it in the old way of just talking to us.
Oh, there it is.
Oh,
it went away. Oh, you know, okay. It's taking a long time. Strategies are, that's actually, I don't have a lot more to say anyway. So those were all those slides that you've seen already are kind of the foundations of the professional communication about environmental education that's going on right now. And this next section is an interpretation by three people, Martha Monroe, myself, and one of Martha's students, Kelly Biedenwig. And basically what we've done is look at a lot of literature that's existed in the last 10 or 15 years to try to assist practitioners in applying environmental education under a variety of circumstances. So do you have that strategies slide up now?
No.
No.
We have the Illuminate screen on top, over top of it, it looks like.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Boy, that's really
there
weird.
And it goes away.
It was there, and it went away.
Oh.
For some reason, every time I try to do this, the Illuminate screen comes up. I'm going to try and... Now can you see it?
We have the
Illuminate
login.
The login, the Illuminate login.
Okay, I just got rid of that. Let's see if that shows up now.
Yay, strategies.
That might have been the problem. Let's see if that works now. I had two Illuminate screens minimized, but anyway, there was two instead of one. Okay, so strategies the message for practitioners is that we find ourselves in a variety of situations trying to figure out how to apply the principles of environmental education. Sometimes all we want to do is convey information. Sometimes we're building understanding, and all that encompasses the broad understanding, both in terms of actually acquiring knowledge and being able to apply knowledge. Sometimes we're really focusing on skill building. For example, that would be with skill building, learning how to build a greenhouse, for example, or actually how to recycle, the actual skills of environmental management, how to do riparian restoration. And finally, sometimes we're focusing on how to build capacity for making change in that has long-term potential. And each one of these areas requires a different application of environmental education principles. And so the next few slides are about some strategies for accomplishing each of those strategies. And please tell me, I tried the number thing at the top. Did that work yet?
Not yet.
Nothing worked yet? Okay.
There it goes. Oh.
It did, and then I took it away, huh? Boy, this is this other thing here that keeps coming up. I keep wondering if that's... I don't know why. There's an underlying Turk thing that keeps getting in the way, I think. So the second one, the strategies one, the first strategy set is about conveying understanding, and the first green bullet is about techniques that you might use to do that. Oh, we're even at the convey. Okay. That you might use to do that in the classroom, and the second batch are strategies that you might use to do that just out in the world somewhere. And I think it should say convey information, not convey understanding. The next one is build understanding, and that will eventually pop up, and I'll spend a little more time on this one so that yours can pop up too. Tell me if it pops up or if I have to go out and come back in again. So building understanding is basically a more interactive component. The conveying information is the one-way communication, one and two-way communication, but obviously conversations are a part of conveying information. Building understanding is a much more active, interactive, and basically in the classroom you can use techniques like discussion, role-playing, simulation, case studies, and experiments. But out in the world, you may be building understanding through a workshop or a website or a simulation or a case study or a survey or a focus group. There's a whole variety of ways. Did that work or not? Did it ever come up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It did?
Yeah.
Okay. The next one, improves skills. So I don't necessarily want to go through all of these. What I really wanted to show was the huge variety of strategies that are available to accomplish each of these four goals in environmental education that many environmental educators have chosen as goals. Let me put it like that. And so on looking at improving skills in the classroom, we can use techniques such as cooperative learning, issue investigation, inquiry learning, citizen science programs, service learning. Out in the world, if we're working with farmers or in a museum or you're working with local government professionals, we can be looking at coaching, mentoring, demonstrations, technical training, a chance to practice a skill, et cetera. Okay, I'm going to keep going unless you tell me it's a total bust here. Sustainable actions is the last component and probably the one we're all aiming for and the most difficult to get to. And this is an area where we're trying to build transformative capacity for leadership, creative problem solving, and environmental monitoring. It's less likely that we would be focusing on this particular aspect in the classroom and more likely that we would be focusing on it with community groups or strategic audiences, particular audiences who we're working with, but there are some classroom-based application opportunities, inquiry-based education, service learning. There's a the Kettering Foundation has put out something called the Environmental Issues. There's the whole forum. There's the whole concept of environment as an integrating concept that gets applied, and et cetera. Then out in the world, there are some models for working towards sustainable actions, including adaptive collaborative management, action research, or training for organizational effectiveness, facilitating partnerships and networks, alternative dispute resolution, negotiated rulemaking, et cetera. There's a lot of different strategies there as well. So I'm on my slide, I am now on the URLs, finally, and I have two slides providing links to resources. The first slide, sorry, I'm just going to take a quick sip here. Those allergies keep popping up. And the first slide is some links to environmental education resources. I mentioned to begin with the ETAP, the Environmental Education and Training Partnership, and a lot of funding has gone into building that website resource. So there's an incredible amount of material there on a whole range of topics. The National Environmental Education Foundation is also partially funded with U.S. EPA money and the remainder of it funds it has to raise itself, and it has developed a number of programs that educators would find useful. There's a Environmental Education Week as one big program that they promote. Another one is their the short messages that they provide for meteorologists, which for right at the moment I seem to be blanking on what it's called, but it's it's a weathercaster's resource that just about every week, once a week, it provides information that weathercasters can use. And they also have a very nice climate, a weekly climate message that's coming out now that's useful for weathercasters. And then finally, the membership association, the North American Association for Environmental Education, has the publications that I used as references at the beginning of the talk. And then the last slide is a slide of Human Dimensions resources and URLs, which I added because sometimes, especially as environmental educators, we forget that there are all these other people out there who are expert in some of the detail areas that I identified as part of the strategy slides, and provide a substantial collection of resources that are mostly professional development resources, but can be quite helpful, especially as we look at skill building and sustainability for our topics. And the first one is hd.gov. Is anyone who's online, has anyone used hd.gov? I recommend it. It's a collaborative website that's been put together by a number of government agencies and some folks like me who are non-government agencies, but it's collaborative. They're trying to build a community of practice, and people are able to submit tools that they have found useful. And it's become it's a fairly filled out website at this point. It's taken a while to get there, but there are a number of resources that will help you figure out how to work with people to do different things that you might want to do. The NOAA Coastal Sciences site is also an outstanding site. They actually were the first ones that I saw that to put up such a comprehensive resource for their educators who are in charge of educating people who live along the oceans and the Great Lakes for behavior change, information and behavior change. And so they've posted an excellent collection of strategies that we can use in our work. The Changing Public Behavior site is my website. It's we had a USDA funding to look at the tricky question of how can you be a neutral educator and also change people's behavior at the same time? So there's a number of resources there, a whole variety of things which I could give a whole separate talk on. There's so much stuff there, but take a look. And then finally, a sub resource in the Changing Public Behavior site is something that we call the Target Audience Research Database, which I want to mention just very briefly. And that has to do with trying to understand what research has been completed which tells us something about how people learn, in this case about water. And what we did was create a searchable database that allows you to search on specific audiences and specific things that you're trying to accomplish, like designing educational materials or developing a message or collecting information about the audience or evaluation, and allows you to search in those two different ways for research findings that are available. Ultimately, we'll have about 300 studies outcomes listed there. We have about close to 200 up right now. I'm just still putting them up, and they cover research from 1988 through 2007. So that's a very quick survey of environmental education as a profession, and then an interpretation by some environmental educators about some of the main goals that we might be faced with in terms of our work, and some strategies that are useful, and then finally some website links for where you can get more information.
Ms. Marta, did you say that there was a slide with all the website links?
Yeah, the last two slides, 12 and 13. Did either of those show up for you?
Not 13,
no.
But it says strategies.
You're still on strategies.
You're still on strategies?
Yeah.
Okay.
It just started appearing.
I saw one, but it went away.
I went to the Climate Literacy Network website, and I clicked on the link that takes you to the PDF of the PowerPoint slides.
It's working that way.
These slides are posted there.
Yeah, yep. The whole collection is posted there. And did 13 show up yet?
No.
I just apologize for this difficulty, and I will try to figure out what the issue was before we do this again.
Yeah, this is Scott. I think the problem is that Elaine may be signed on twice as the Turk administrator and as herself.
That could be the problem.
Yeah,
we just got the URL. Great. So can we get it as a just as a PDF?
Go to the Climate Literacy Network website, and under the teleconference schedule where we describe Elaine's talk, the little abstract, there's a link there. You can download it right from there.
Great.
Yep.
Yeah, so, and it is I posted it as a PDF so that it would be easier to download.
Great.
Yep, that's great.
So the last two slides should have been up or should be up. 12, I had 13 up for a minute, then I had 12. And I think I probably did screw things up by signing in twice, although I turned off I have the Turk one up, and the other one I got myself out of probably 20 minutes ago, so I don't know why it's still causing a problem.
Yeah, it's still showing as being on, and I'm guessing that's probably what's creating the delay, I guess, anyway.
So that's probably my fault, I don't know. For anybody here who's doing a presentation in the future, now you know. Just follow that one link and don't look at anything else. And I hope you were able to concentrate at least somewhat on this quick tour of environmental education.
Elaine, I have a question.
I appreciate you providing this information to us, and all the links I think are going to be really useful.
Yeah.
Somebody had a question.
Yeah, I had a question. This is Marta, and I'm not sure how to ask this question, but one question is what role the arts have played in the educational efforts, and the second, if any, and the second is, what role does scientific accuracy play, and how do you walk the delicate line, as you were alluding to earlier, of advocacy versus and social change versus presenting information? You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I mean, two questions. The arts question is there are a number of environmental educators who have used the arts as a communications tool, and a whole variety of examples of everything from murals and getting kids involved in painting murals to other strategies. What I'm trying to say is everything from you look at it to you get engaged in making it. The NAAA conference, annual conference, is a good place to hear or learn more about what people are doing in that area. Right. And there's some literature about it, although I'm not an expert on what the literature looks like specifically for the arts. I just know that there's some. Mm-hmm. We did have, I want to mention, though, in relation to the arts, that in Wisconsin we had a Humanities Council-funded project which engaged about 20 artists in their interpretation of climate change concerns, and then what we did was create a traveling exhibit of their art and a book, and I can send out the URL for that in a follow-up. But it's a gorgeous book, and the exhibits at museums around the state attracted quite a lot of media attention, including Wisconsin Public Television Program and et cetera, et cetera. So we see the arts as effective. Let's put it like that. It's a different angle. That the other dilemma that you were talking about comes down to who you are as a professional and your job description and what you're expected to do as part of your job. So people who are educators in the public school system, K-12 educators, are very careful about staying away from politics and advocacy in terms of how information is presented. And so kids have the opportunity to do service learning, and they may have an education activity which would involve looking at dilemmas or values or attitudes, but which would not be prescriptive. Mm-hmm. In the world of extension or the Department of Natural Resources or a federal agency, the way we've addressed this has been more about focusing on providing skill training and letting the values discussion come out of the skill training instead of vice versa. So if people need to know how to, if we need to keep the cows out of the stream in order to reduce nutrients in the stream, we show people how to build fences, and we don't worry about having a big philosophical discussion about whether or not that's, you know, whether we're forcing you to do it or it's a good idea or not. We just show people how to do it. And then, so the evolution of people's values, the process is a little bit different than it might be in the classroom. That's kind of a quick answer, but
This is Boren. I just want to chime in for a second on both of those. One is that within NAAE, we have special interest groups. They're called commissions within the NAAE lingo, and there is a commission for environmental justice and one for elementary and secondary education, so it's folks who are particularly interested in those areas. And we do have a relatively new, like within the last maybe, 5 years, Arts and Culture Commission. So that is a fairly new, significant part of NAAE, of folks who gather together around the notion of arts and culture and how that gets expressed within environmental education. And then the other question about fairness and accuracy and balance and all those sorts of things. Elaine's absolutely correct in terms of that it all has to do with who the audience is. But you may want to take a look at the one document that she referenced earlier, which is Environmental Education Materials Guidelines for Excellence, and those are available. The whole PDF of it is available up on the NAAE website. And that goes into a lot more detail about how do you start to think about that factual accuracy issue.
Great, thanks.
Of course, where the science disagrees, then we've got teaching about uncertainty.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's where balance comes in. So it's the, you know, well, what's the preponderance versus what's the, you know, sort of the alternative theories.
So I think my question for the group would be, I know that Tamara is bringing together a group of people who are part of the project as consultants sometime this summer, and that Bora will be speaking to the group as June or something like that. But I guess sort of an ongoing question to the group would be, what more could we do together to hone our ability to figure out how to teach about climate change and under what circumstances and with which audiences? As we've learned from the new NOAA website and the many, many other resources we've seen, there's an incredible amount of educational materials available, and that doesn't seem to be the issue. It's more about who is the audience and how to, and what resources do we use, and what are the goals for our work with the audience.
Well, actually, this is Tamara. In the Clean Pathway Project, where we're trying to identify resources and actually review them against the climate literacy essential principles and review criteria that drew on partially on the NAAE criteria and on NSEL's criteria, we're finding that there are, we thought there were going to be many, many, many resources to consider, and it turns out that in terms of those making the bar, in terms of excellence, there are comparatively few. Fewer than we had thought. And right now we are just actually looking at activities. And obviously the materials can go beyond that, but for this first round of our review process, we're just focusing on activities. And so it might be an avenue for us to think about as we're going to complete this review process just so that we get our mechanisms under, you know, sort of under control. But we have two more rounds of review, and we'll be extending the collection beyond just activities. And so we're going to be exploring what areas might be the most effective ones to expand into in terms of including them in the collection in the future. So,
Tamara, did you include website activities as well as printed things, or what was in the group that you looked at?
We actually, I'm not saying we only looked at online activities,
mm-hmm.
but they had to be available. There had to be a URL to actually get them. It could be that you then would print them out.
Mm-hmm.
But we defined things as activities and were relatively short and totally self-contained so that it wasn't dependent on you having done a previous activity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So a sequence of activities wouldn't qualify, but any one of an activity in a sequence, if it was self-contained, would qualify. There are hands-on activities that are not computer-based, but you had to be able to get them online. It could be that you just printed out instructions that are PDF.
And you're talking just about K through 12, is that correct?
No, actually the resources are just 6 through 16. So middle school, high school.
I have a question, Tamara. When you said short, do you mean like short like an hour or short like 3 minutes?
Well, actually, both of those fit in the definition of short. Short could actually even be a couple of days if it's a classroom activity that needs multiple classes. What we didn't want is full curriculum.
Yep.
What we weren't looking at, and I won't say we're ignoring those. What we're doing is things that come through, we can describe it another time, the review process, but we have a set of resource collectors that are identifying things, and they make a recommendation as to whether it should be considered further. And in that process, if something is a visualization with no pedagogical scaffolding, but we think it's a good visualization, it's not going to make it through the review process right now, but we're putting it in what we're calling a holding tank for consideration later. And so things that are full curriculum I have a resource called Earth Labs, which is modules of 7 to 9 labs, which could be online or could be hands-on. Those, as a whole, wouldn't go through the review process now, but individual activities within that could possibly. But we're keeping those in our resource pool, but just in a sort of a holding pattern until, you know, we decide how we might want to expand the collection.
Tamara, this is Marta. There might be a possibility of putting some arts visualizations maybe in that holding place that then could be linked with pedagogical kinds of things. I'm thinking just at this moment with Chris Jordan's work. I don't know if you know him or of his work. He's a photographer, and he has these huge photographs that are like 4 by 7 feet that are photographs of, for example, 2 million plastic beverage bottles, which is the number that
can
destroy every 5 minutes in the U.S. And we've commissioned him to do a video now of to help visualize carbon molecules, which will be really interesting in terms of greenhouse gases. But I'm just thinking about, you know, there are these really powerful, powerful visualizations that...
Our resource collectors are looking at particular collections, but you have the opportunity, if you go to the Clean Pathway Project's website, there's a place where you can suggest resources so that if it's available online, you can go in, and it's a short form for you to suggest what it, you know, that we consider it, and you can put a note there as to why you think that it's something to be considered. And the other part of that is that eventually what we can do with resources like this or videos is to create what we call an activity sheet, which provides that it won't make it an activity in of itself. It could be, but it doesn't have to be, but it provides that educationally relevant scaffolding for a resource to make suggestions of how it might be used.
Uh-huh.
We're not going to be creating those explicitly yet, but they're relatively short, and we could potentially do that in a future iteration of this review process.
Great.
I just wanted to chime in because we're getting towards the top of the hour here, and I know some people need to leave, but just to promote shamelessly my blog, the question about what other things could we do, certainly we can share on the listserv, but I would invite you all to comment to postings on the blog, or if any of you want to do a guest blog posting, get in touch with me and let me know. And right now it's sort of been my soapbox, and I apologize for sometimes maybe editorializing more than I should, but this topic of how do we increase the quality and quantity of climate literacy in this country is very near and dear to me. So please, if you get a chance to comment on the postings, I for a while turned the comments off on the blog because I was getting such a huge amount of spam, but I think we've figured out a way to minimize that now. So
the other avenue we can go is that we have on the Climate Literacy Network website, we have a discussion page, so we can start a discussion thread. And Marta, if you want to, we could start one about this particular issue of images and how we might best make use of them. We could, or various kinds of photographs and art in terms of making use of them. We could start a dialogue, a discussion on that also.
Uh huh. Okay. And also, just a quick question: is are you guys also working with the CRED Psychology of Climate Change Communication Guide and the Six Americas and the CBSM work and that kind of stuff too? That has to do with sociology and social science and all that kind of stuff.
So that has to do with targeting your audience and then understanding your audience and then knowing what technique is most appropriate for that audience and is of interest to that audience, all those resources. That's what I was mentioning at the very beginning of this presentation, that on their own, none of those are useful. They have to all be part of something, part of a bigger strategy.
Right, exactly. But they're very helpful if you are using those in collaboration with whatever educational...
Right, they're the background... background perspective or whatever.
Right. My analogy always is, if facts were enough, there wouldn't be the entire diet industry. Or the anti-smoking campaigns or anything like that, that affect part
of it. Well, one of the things we can do eventually if people would be interested is we have created a set of review criteria that address the scientific accuracy of the resource and the pedagogical effectiveness of the resource and the ease of use and robustness of the resource. That was put together with drawing on a lot of these other documents that are out there. So we could have a discussion at some point about those. And I think probably it would be most appropriate after we finish our first review boot camp, but then we can revisit those and get some input from this group as to whether they are addressing the issues as they should.
Tamara, just clarification. I want to make sure I understood something you said. The reason why you're focusing on single short activities at this point is just to establish your review process and criteria. Is that right? I mean, you're not intending to say anything pedagogically about the value of short, isolated activities.
Oh, yeah. No, we have. There's no value. There's no explicit additional value placed on those particular resources versus other kinds of resources. The idea was to identify a concise set of coherent kinds of resources, and at the same time we were setting up all of these review processes and procedures, and it's just a lot of things to get under control at the same time.
So it's a means of limiting the process establishment.
Right.
Got it.
We all realized up front that we would be doing this at least two more times, and then based on the outcomes of this, in discussions with both our advisory board and with the Climate Literacy Network to determine which directions would be most effective in terms of opening it up further. Because I do think that in the next round we might identify a couple of other types of resources to go after, but I don't think we'll open it up to anything and everything again. I think that it's easier to focus on particular avenues, that's open for discussion also, but it's kind of helped in terms of getting consistency in the review process to constrain the possibilities a bit is helpful.
Yep, makes sense. Thank you.
Tamara, this is Louise Huffman. Just for everybody's information, this is kind of a timely discussion because, matter of fact, I had to leave the call for a couple of minutes because I got a phone call from a team of people that's flying here today to work the rest of the week on we're developing a new set of climate change resources. We have our set that we call the Flexibit Materials for Andrill that really focus on Andrill's work in climate change, and now we're moving to a more comprehensive set of activities for teaching the objectives that we have written up in our environmental literacy framework that I talked about before. So this week is actually our curriculum team coming together to put into place we're going to come up with our activities that we're going to develop over the next couple of months and where this package of materials is going to go. So if anybody, as you've been looking at these, if you see any big holes in what is needed and anybody wants to throw some ideas our way, we've got a team ready to start on this tomorrow, and we'll be working on it over the next few months. So I agree with you. As we did our, we looked at a lot of activities out there to see what was already available, and we had a really hard time finding really good ones. So that's what we're hoping to develop here.
Well, we can potentially talk to you and share these review criteria and the kinds of things we've been finding.
Yep. That would be great.
Okay, we're actually 5 minutes over. Is there any other comments or questions?
So, Louise, are you and I and Luann going to be talking whenever it is? Is it tomorrow?
I'm trying to remember if I actually got I'm looking at my calendar here. Did I get a definite date, or I thought you said you were going to send me one?
Are we done with the call?
Yes, I think yes. Okay. Thank you, everybody.
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. I'll double check.
All right. So, Mark, okay. Yeah, I thought you were going to engage with Louise and Luann about their resources, and I think that this connection would be an important one for you to make.
I agree.
So, did we set? I'm really sorry, Mark. I've got so many things going around in my head right now. Did we set a time? I'm not seeing it on my calendar.
Let me double check here.
If I did, I apologize.
And this is Anna. I think we said maybe Friday morning would work. But I think you said you needed to check back.
Oh, yeah, right.
I said I needed to check back.
Yeah. You need
okay,
to check something.
I'm sorry. I'm looking here at the... Yeah, what's a good time? Is that you, Ann?
Yes.
Or who am I talking to? Okay, what's a good time for you all that morning?
I think I'm pretty flexible on Friday.
Yeah, any time looks good.
Okay, and you guys are mountain time, right?
Right.
What if we say 9 o'clock your time, which would be 10 o'clock my time?
Okay.
That's good to me. Yeah, perfect.
Okay, do you want to call me or should I call you?
Why don't you call my number, and then we can just, Anna and I can be both in the same room.
Okay, can you give that to me real quick?
Yeah, 303-735-3155.
Okay, was that 735-3135? I'm sorry, 3155?
Yeah, 735-3155.
Okay, great. I've got it on my agenda, and we'll give you a call then.
Excellent.
Perfect.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Talk to you later. Bye.
So, Mark, Donna, are we going to talk for a few minutes?
Sure.
Sure.
And I have it on my calendar that we were.
Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, I think next week I've got a conflict on Tuesday. So.
Okay. Well, I have to be at. I'm going to be at the NRC roundtable.
Oh yeah, that's right. That'll be exciting.
So maybe we'll see if Scott can facilitate the call. I'll see if Scott can do that. Unless you have somebody else in mind.
That's fine.
Probably depends what we're going to be talking about. Maybe we can establish what the goal is for that conversation,
yeah.
And then we can see who would be the best person to facilitate.
Yeah, well, the thing is, right now we have no speakers scheduled, so it's kind of an open session.
Yeah. I think it might be worthwhile starting to think about... So my open questions still for the bootcamp are, if we do a scientific review, are we going to use the same review criteria? My personal opinion is yes, but I think we should bring it up for discussion, that if we need to extend our review criteria in some ways, and then we should decide how we're going to what are going to be our criteria to move the resources forward to the bootcamp. Or to the next review.
Well, first of all, I think that the review criteria that they are now are the ones that I think we should just keep in place through the boot camp.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to change them at this point. You've been fine-tuning them and yeah. So forth, and I don't think we should change them at this point. I do, however, think that some of the criteria, and maybe what we want to do, at least in the Word document, is to sort them. Things that would apply to any resource and things that apply to activities, which is what we're looking for now.
Right.
Because that's where we might want to...
Yeah.
What?
So that we can develop new review criteria for videos or podcasts.
Right. Either we've developed new ones or we adjust this, or maybe there's sub-questions, like a branching. If a resource is such and such, this is what you need to think about, and if it's an activity, this, if it's a video, that, I don't know. But it's becoming clear that, to me anyway, that we need to share these review criteria with people. And
yeah.
I'm not comfortable just doing it now, but people really need them now.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what your thoughts are on this. I mean, I know that this came up at the NASA GCC EPI meeting where people are developing resources, and if they have these review criteria up front, they can develop them to address the review criteria.
Right.
And it just makes for having excellent resources
right, yeah.
Up front.
And I think Susan had suggested to share those with all the GCCE projects. Or
right. Well, so I talked about it, but
yeah,
I just talked about it in general. I mean, they didn't mm-hmm. give me. They originally were going to give me a time slot, and I was going to sort of go through them.
Mm-hmm.
They decided not to do that, but then it kind of kept coming up in breakout sessions.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, Anna and Mark. What are your thoughts on how on sharing these? Should we think about sharing them? In the next month or so, or should we wait till after the boot camp? If it's not likely to, I mean, I'm thinking it's not likely to change, but what I don't want to happen is for us in June to decide we have to change them because we've already, I think that we need to complete this process using one set of criteria.
Mm-hmm.
It just gets too confusing. You've gotten all your resource collectors going in the same direction with these review criteria. To change it now when we haven't even finished the process once is, I think, a mistake.
Mm.
I agree. Yeah, I think that let's assume that for the boot camp things are really frozen up, or it's a bit like the essential principles where at a certain point you got to say, we're not going to tinker with this anymore, and we'll move forward. You know, down the line we might have to revisit things.
Mm-hmm.
But, certainly through the boot camp, let's stay with what we've got and keep it
okay.
simple. But I think
because
that we could share this with others who are, doing similar types of review things, and inevitably we'll get some input from them but you know,
well, what I say, I mean, I think there's two potential avenues. I do want to wait until the NSF proposals are in, because I'm too much thinking about that to try to do anything else. But after that, I think we could use one of these climate literacy network telecons to really go through them and present them to this group. And the other place that I can contact Lynn Chambers and suggest, or maybe Barbara Mann, and suggest that we take one of these monthly NASA GCCE meetings and present it to that group.
Yeah. I've gone through all the people that have been funded with their little presentations.
Well, you see, since they've...
Yeah, there's more
now. They probably haven't. I mean, they sort of, I think through now, kind of, like maybe through about a month ago, got us through the first group. And so I think they're just starting on the second group. But this past week was the new group, new people who were funded in 2009.
Okay.
Late 2009, I guess. There's a 2008 group and a 2009 group, and they just had the proposal submitted for the 2010. So there's not that people yet. But so I can talk to them about, I mean, because right now it's just presentation after presentation after presentation. So I don't know what their longer-term schedule is, but I can talk to them about that and,
okay.
and offer to do a session about these. And then we could, what I would like to do is post them on the, post them as a either as a Word document or like we did the energy thing on the Climate Literacy Network site, so we can easily point people to them. But I do think that they need to be sorted as to those that address a resource in general, no matter what kind of resource it is, and those that are targeting the kind of resource that we're looking for.
Mm.
You know, activities. We're asking for things that are self-contained activities, and as Mark, you pointed out, videos have a value, but they're not self-contained activities, so they wouldn't pass that criteria. So I think they just need to be sorted. I think they can be there so that we can point out how the collection's being developed, and another piece of input that we want is what's the next step after we get through this first version. We're going to start to revisit, you know, what is it that we want to include in this collection, and, you know, I think people will have various opinions about directions to go.
Hmm.
Yeah, for sure. no shortage of opinions.
Right.
All right.
I really don't see a reason why we should hold back on these criterions, because we're using those. And we
right.
can just be transparent and say, well, we are working with them. Let's wait until we are done with the first round of reviews, because actually talking with the resource collectors, the new ones, Marion and I have realized there were a few spots where we were like, oh, we could add something there easily without destroying the entire process, like a comment field here. And
mm-hmm.
so I think we might still fiddle just a little bit. So, but I think it's great.
Okay, so you're suggesting that we don't have to really wait right now, that these minor changes aren't going to impact the input we get from people.
Right, but we could wait until we are done with the first round of reviews, so a couple of weeks.
You mean a couple of weeks from now?
From now.
Or what I'm not sure you're saying is whether you're talking about waiting until after the boot camp or...
No, I'm waiting. I say wait until the end of May.
Okay, well, that's fine, because I really want to wait till after this proposal is due, because
yeah.
I really would like to focus on it, and until the proposal is in, I can't.
No, that makes sense.
Okay, so we'll plan this for June.
Okay.
All right. And it's not going to happen in the NASA GCCE for even longer than that. I mean, I think I'll probably contact them now, because I don't think it'll happen.
Right.
I mean, I'll tell them it's not going to happen in May, and they only have a teleconference once a month.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So here's my thought about next week. Because of this National Academy's roundtable that you'll be on the front lines of, they're going to be webcasting it. And, you know, I'd like to try to catch as much of it as I can. Just, you know,
should I suggest that people just participate in that and cancel it for next week?
Exactly, because it will be Tuesday.
Right, do you have a link to, I mean, basically I would like to suggest that and provide a link
right.
To the webcast. Do you, I can find it out if you don't have. If you have it easily, I'll ask you to send it to me. Otherwise, I will.
It's in my blog post.
Oh, it's in your blog post. All right, I'll look there.
I'll send it to you right now.
Okay.
People do need to register, but
so
I
can get that out relatively early then.
Yeah, both on Tuesday and Wednesday. I mean, we've got our usual Wednesday call, but you won't be there, and we could still meet without you, but I'm not sure. I think at this stage it might actually be more.
Okay.
More
so we actually. Okay.
Be on the webinar.
All right. That's probably a good idea. Okay. I'll suggest that, too.
So when are you heading down there?
Monday afternoon. So it starts, and they've asked people that are on the round table to either present or summarize. So I'm supposed to present 5 minutes, no PowerPoints, but I'm presenting at the beginning of the informal science education session.
Odd.
So, yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Is there an agenda? I haven't actually seen an agenda.
Yes, there is. There is an agenda. I've received one anyway.
Yeah, I see it.
You see it?
Yeah.
What's the URL for your blog, Mark? We should actually put
series.colorado.edu. Let's see. Shoot, I just had it open here. Darn it. Got too many windows.
Oh, right here it says Blogs McCaffrey. Oh, that's icy. Is that it?
Yeah, it's Blogs McCaffrey. series.colorado.edu/blogs/McCaffrey.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so where is... the climate change roundtable here, I see.
Climate education training and outreach. It's about two-thirds of the way down the page. And I just sent you an email, too.
Okay. But do you see, I don't see an agenda here.
It's on the right side in that little table where it says May 11th and 12th. There's a little agenda over...
No,
it's...
I went to the link and it says Climate Change Education Roundtable. There's nothing on the right side. There's on the left side.
Well, down below where it says Meeting 1.
Oh, yeah.
May 11th and 12th, and then there's an agenda right of that.
Okay. Let's see. I want to see if it has our names here. Yeah, so it has my name. So you'll see that I'm in Informal Education and Public Understanding. And the person that's presenting also is in that session is Tony Leiserwitz.
Well, it's probably because of your involvement with Climate Literacy Network as an information thing.
Yeah.
But yeah,
because let's see, we have...
You're going to have a lot to say in 5 minutes.
Well, if you have suggestions, send them to me. If there's particular points you think I should bring out, that would be helpful, because there's so much to focus on, I have to decide, so...
Yeah.
Actually, it might be worth my while to send an email to the Climate Literacy Network and ask that same question.
Well, you might get deluged with ideas on that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think to keep it really focused, I think, you know, you should definitely take some credit for being involved with helping develop the essential principles,
mm-hmm.
and how out of that came the Climate Literacy Network, which has been going for 2 years strong, and from that the Clean Pathway developed, and we've been talking about regional programs for, you know, better part of a year now.
Mm-hmm. No, it's closer. It's getting closer to 2 years, actually.
Probably because a lot of educators realize that they need to provide that local context or the regional
mm-hmm.
context and solutions.
Mm-hmm.
You can say something about sort of this emerging best practice of combining science and solutions. That would be great.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, so I will send out an email, and I will include the link and suggest people participate in the roundtable. I guess it's going to be, well, I'll read what it says.
I'll be really curious. A lot of these names I just don't know, and I'm wondering, you know, how they got picked or why they're there, but I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you they did extensive, I mean, interviewed everybody.
Yeah, no, I got interviewed for a better part of an hour, and
mm-hmm.
I had a run-in years ago with Jim Mahoney when I was at NOAA.
Yeah?
Jim Mahoney, who's at the time was the NOAA, not the administrator, but the guy under the administrator, and we were developing this website on abrupt climate change.
Mm-hmm.
There was a whole big scandal because the White House wanted to shut down the website, and Andy Revkin found out about it, and basically I got blamed for it.
Blamed for what?
For Andy Revkin finding out about it.
Oh.
The White House wanted to shut down the website.
Oh.
Jim Mahoney was mad because I was the one who allegedly blew the whistle to Revkin, and you know I did talk to Revkin, but anyhow, that's a whole story.
Okay.
I'll tell you another time.
All right. Okay, I'm going to try to make sure that what happened today with Illuminate doesn't happen tomorrow.
Yeah.
I do think it was probably she was logged in twice.
Right.
As a participant and as a moderator, and I think that was confusing things a lot. Because we didn't have any of that problem. I was flipping through my slides, and you had no trouble seeing them. But I think what we've discovered earlier today when we tested it is the person doesn't need to be logged in as a moderator. Somebody at Turk needs to be logged. I can be logged in as a moderator, and I can give the person moderator privileges. And that way, they don't have to fiddle with all of that. They just have the one link like everybody else does.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think
we
I'm just gonna
tomorrow at between in this half hour when we upload.
Right.
The file.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. We can do that, but I because I've never seen that happen before,
yeah.
Where she was clicking on and it was taking a good 15, 20 seconds, and then it would show up and then immediately disappear.
Yeah. It was terrible.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was pretty bad.
But well, we have Sean too.
Yes, I know. Sean wasn't on the phone to ask those questions. Sean's got a lot of experience with Illuminate.
Yeah.
Okay. Should I make the suggestion now to the Clean Pathway Project management about not having a meeting next week, but having people participate in the roundtable, or should I wait until our advisory board meeting tomorrow?
Oh, I don't know. Just go ahead and send it out now. Would be my thought.
I'll do that.
What we can do on Monday at our telecon, we can start talking about coming up with an idea of how to move everything forward. So we have there's a suggestion from the resource collectors that we can present the week after how we're going to proceed.
Okay. That'd be great.
So I'll put that on the agenda either next week or the week after, so there's something for the next meeting that takes place on Wednesday.
Okay, great. All right. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you, Tara.
Okay.
We'll see you.
Bye-bye.
Tomorrow.
Bye.